to. A sharp, powerful climax thunders down my spine, lighting me up as I come hard in my hand. I breathe like a man sprinting, as if I'd ridden my bike harder than I ever have. When I open my eyes, I thank the Lord that Josie's paper dedication extends from toilet paper all the way to tissues, because there's a box of Kleenex next to me. I grab some and clean it up, then head to the kitchen to wash my hands and readjust my dick. When the shower turns off, the images haven't stopped. All I can see is her naked, wet, and hungry for me, and I can't stop fucking her in my mind. I can't take my hands off her. 5 minutes later, she emerges, her hair wet in a twisty bun. She wears light blue pajama bottoms and a pink tank top. She claps her hands together. "Those 7-layer bars should be ready to eat now," she says, all sweet and innocent. Soon, we sit down with our glasses of milk and her treats, like a good boy and girl. As I watch her nibble on a chocolate chip-covered corner of a bar, I wonder if she was thinking about two unknown guys in the shower, or if she's like me and got off to her roommate. Chapter 16. From the pages of Josie's recipe book. Josie's Magic Amnesiac 7-layer bars. Ingredients: unsalted butter melted, graham cracker crumbs, finely chopped pecans, can substitute walnuts, semi-sweet chocolate chips, butterscotch chips, sweetened flaked coconut, 14-ounce can sweetened condensed milk. When you really need to take your mind off someone, I highly recommend 7-layer bars. The taste is so intoxicatingly delicious that it is quite possibly the closest substitute for... Well, look, let's just say these bars are some kind of sublimation. Directions. 1. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. In small bowl, combine graham cracker crumbs and butter. Mix well. Press crumb mixture firmly on bottom of baking pan. Pressing firmly makes me focus all my energy on cooking, not on how much I'm looking forward to Chase coming home, not on how much I enjoy living with him, not on how much I liked rubbing his shoulders the other week. Gah, I messed up the recipe. Be right back. 2. Layer in remaining ingredients. Press firmly with fork. Pour sweetened condensed milk evenly over crumb mixture. Baking is therapy. It soothes me. The times when dating in New York City have been weird and frustrating and disappointing, at least there's something I can do well. I can mix and create and turn ingredients into something tasty, something that makes people happy. Honestly, I suppose that's all I really want in life, to make someone happy. Even better if that someone makes me feel that way, too. 3. Bake 25 minutes or until lightly browned, cool, cut into bars. Serve to your roommate with a straight face as if you didn't just imagine him grabbing you, touching you, sliding into you, and pounding you hard under the hot stream of water in your shower. No, I swear I didn't fantasize about every naked inch of him, and he's not the reason I had to bite my lip to keep from screaming out his name. 4. Have a second helping. Well, I did say the bars were sublimation. Chapter 17. The red line flattens. Anguish floods my bones. Sorrow drowns my blood. The patient is gone. We lost him. A 34-year-old man named Blake Treehorn. All the medicine, all the paddles, all the speeding ambulances, all the nurses and doctors here at Mercy, and we couldn't save his life. I exhale heavily. One of the nurses makes the sign of the cross. Another runs her hand gently along the patient's arm. I look at my watch and confirm the time of death. 1:35 p.m., I say, and the nurse records the information in his chart. I scrub a hand over my jaw as a profound sense of both sadness and failure digs deep into my flesh. I'll be signing his death certificate shortly. David, another ER doc who worked to save him too, claps me on the back. We did our best, he mumbles. Yeah. That's the thing. We did. The paramedics barreled in 15 minutes ago with a man who worked at an office building 10 blocks away. During a routine Wednesday afternoon meeting, Blake clutched his chest and complained of pain. He collapsed seconds later, and his coworkers called 911. He'd been fading when he arrived, and we'd fought like hell to save the guy. 30 minutes later, he's dead in his early 30s on a hospital bed in an emergency room in the middle of Manhattan. Life is short, man, David says, his tone heavy. It sure is, I say with a sigh. I've lost patients before. Every doctor has. Last year in Africa, we said goodbye to more people than I wanted to count. It's part of the job. I get that, and I can live with it. It's what I signed up for. But I'm only human, and I'm not as steel as I pretend to be. This one hits me hard. Blake was young and healthy. I heard one of his coworkers say he'd gone running with him the other morning. There's no time to sit with these churning emotions, though. When the charge nurse informs me there are multiple gunshot wounds coming in, I have to pretend I'm Teflon. That's how the rest of the afternoon unfurls, like a parade of pain and heartache. No sex wounds, no amusing tales, no naughty moments that make for funny stories with friends. It's all too fucking real. One of the gunshot victims dies from blood loss. A patient who seemed to be improving after coming in yesterday with a stroke passes on. By the time my shift finally ends, I sink down on the bench in the locker room, so ready to be done with the Grim Reaper today. But I just sit. I can't move yet. A leaden weight has settled deep in my gut. I drop my forehead to my hand and let the gloom spread through me. Sometimes I am good at separating work from my emotions, but sometimes work is emotional. As much as I pride myself on the ability to wear blinders, the fact is, my business is one of life and death. And death sucks. The door creaks open and David trudges in. Want to get a beer? I raise my face. Pretty sure you meant whiskey. A small smile cracks on his tired face. Make it a double. You're on. And that's how I find myself at Speakeasy in Midtown at 5 p.m. We trade war stories and talk sports, and it eases some of the day from my shoulders. When we finish, David tips his chin and pushes his glasses up higher on the bridge of his nose. And on that note, I should head home to the woman. I clasp his hand in a goodbye shake, and when I leave, the last word resonates with me. There's one woman I want to see. Josie closes late on Wednesdays, so I catch the subway and exit at 72nd. When I walk along the block where she works, the early evening crowds thickening around me, I swear I can feel the clouds lift and my heart start to lighten just from knowing I'll see her. Josie is my sunshine in this rain-soaked day. As the smooth, intelligent voice of the audiobook narrator in my ears delves into the physics of perpetual motion, I pass a flower shop, spotting a bouquet of daisies. For the briefest of seconds, an idea takes hold. But I smash it, scoffing at myself. I'm only going to say hi to her. Bringing her flowers would be something one of her cheeseball dates would do. I'm not dating her. I don't have to worry if she'll be in my life tomorrow, or the next day, or the next year. She is in my life because she's my friend, and that's why I'm the one who gets to see her, who gets to stop by her work, who gets to hang out with her. The rest of the assholes aren't good enough to even get past a first date. But she does like flowers. I stop, turn around, and buy the daisies from her friend Lily's shop. I haven't met Lily before, but the brunette who helps me is sweet and outgoing, so I assume she must be Josie's friend. And I hope she sorts out the situation with her dickhead boyfriend, because whoever he is, he needs to treat her better. The flowers are beautiful. Have a great evening, I say, since the least I can do is be a considerate customer. You too, she says with a friendly wave. I leave the store. As I near Josie's bakery, a whole squadron of nerves launches in my chest. My heart speeds up. This doesn't just feel like nerves from the day. This feels like something else entirely, something I haven't felt in a long time. Something that's good, but terribly dangerous at the same damn time. Gripping the bouquet tighter, I push open the yellow door to the Sunshine Bakery. Josie works alone, bending to take a huge slice of chocolate cake from the glass counter. She stands, sets it in a white bakery box, and hands it to the customer, a thin redhead wearing jeans and heels. The customer rubs her hands together. "I can't wait. This is my favorite cake in all of New York City." Josie tilts her head and flashes the woman a wide, genuine smile. "I'm so happy to hear that. You deserve a slice today," she says, then tells her the amount. Josie's hair is swept back in a pink-checked bandana, her bangs showing. Her T-shirt is orange, with the cheery sun logo of her store. Bangles slip and slide on her wrist. When the customer leaves, Josie's eyes find mine, and they light up. "Hey, you," she calls out, and slinks around the corner to give me a hug. We don't usually hug when we see each other, but maybe her arms are around me because I don't stop by her work that often. Or maybe she senses that I need it. "Hey," I say, then I steal a quick inhale. Today she is cake. She is frosting. She is sugar and everything good in the world. And all those strange sensations descend on me once more as my heart beats weirdly faster. When we separate, she arches an eyebrow. "What brings you to these environs, stranger? I'm about to close up." I clear my throat and thrust the flowers at her. Her smile grows even bigger. She dips her nose to the petals and inhales. "I love them. My favorite." "I know." "I'm going to take them home to make our place cheery," she says, as she heads to the door, locks it, and flips the sign to say closed. When she turns around to meet my gaze, I sink down at one of the tables and drag a hand through my hair. "Uh-oh," she says, joining me and setting down the bouquet. "Bad day at work?" I nod. She brings her chair even closer. "I'm guessing that means a real bad day, not a bad day like someone at the hospital ate your tuna fish sandwich in the break room fridge bad day." "I hate tuna fish sandwiches," she laughs.
"Me too."
She takes a beat.
"Tell me what happened."
So I do. And when I'm done, I feel a hell of a lot better and lighter and happier than I did after having drinks with David. No disrespect to the dude. He's a cool cat. But he's not Josie, and she's quickly become the person I want to talk to. Scratch that. She's been that person for a long time. Especially since she's a great listener, and she has access to much better medicine than I do some days. The strawberry shortcake cupcake I eat as we walk home can cure almost any sadness. Later, I lie awake in bed. Darkness has fallen over our home. Moonlight cuts through the blinds, casting stripes of light over the navy bedspread. Outside, a horn bleats and a garbage truck slogs along the avenue, lifting and dumping, lifting and dumping. I flip to my side, the sheets slipping to my waist. The green lights on the clock flash 11:55 at me. But I can't fall asleep easily like I usually do. I can't blame the events at Mercy. I've had to let them go. Tomorrow is another day, and I need to be sharp for whatever comes my way. I'm not a superstitious man, but bad news comes in waves, so I need to be girded for a possible roulette wheel of destruction tomorrow. So it's not the patients, may Blake and the gunshot guy too rest in peace, that I'm thinking of anymore. It's the woman on the other side of this wall. What's keeping me up is the part of me that insisted on seeing her at the end of the day. The part that demanded I go to Sunshine Bakery, that I buy her flowers, that I tell her what happened. I squeeze my eyes closed, imagining a patient is presenting with the same symptoms I have. What would I conclude? I list them in my head, heart beating faster unexpectedly, nerves appearing inconfucking-veniently, desire to see the woman after a shitty day. When I get to the last one, I stop, on desire. Because there's the embodiment of it in my doorway. In shadows, she stands.
She raises her hand and waves.
Hey,
she says softly.
Hey, you awake?
No, I'm sound asleep. She laughs and leans her shoulder against the doorframe. She's in her usual asleep attire. Boy shorts like the kind you'd find in a Victoria's Secret catalog. Material as thin as a spider web and just as wispy. She pairs them with a loose pink scoop neck shirt. No bra. I'm so fucking screwed. I prop my head in my hand.
I thought you were the queen sleeper. What's the story there? Insomnia visiting you?
She quirks her lips, holds out her hands.
A lot on my mind.
I push up higher.
Yeah?
She fidgets with the hem of her shirt.
I keep thinking about your day.
Then she rolls her eyes.
You know me, everything is all mushed together.
Like cake batter, huh? She nods.
I'm all blended, she says, then mimes mixing up some goodies.
Do you want to talk?
I don't want to keep you up.
I'm already up. Her eyes drift to my bed. My breath escapes my body. Shit, fuck, hell, heaven. There's no excuse for what I'm about to do, but I do it anyway. I pat my bed. A small lift of her lips is her answer. Then a step forward. Her bare feet pad across my floor. Every moment is a chance to turn back, but every moment she comes closer. And closer. And now she lowers herself to my bed. She's barely wearing anything. I'm only in briefs. She lies on top of the sheets. I'm under them. But she's inches away. Technically, I can play my mind games with myself. I can rationalize this choice in a simple, logical way. We're still dressed. A sheet separates us. She lies on her back. I'm propped on my side. But the moonlight and the hour and this aching in my chest won't let me lie to myself anymore. I'm buzzed. I'm totally fucking tipsy on the possibility. We've hugged, we've touched, we've been like two middle schoolers tapping shoulders and tickling waists. Tonight, we're adults in bed.
I was thinking about your patient tonight.
Her tone is introspective.
You said Blake was 34, and the heart attack was out of the blue. I'm only 28.
You're not going to have a heart attack, Josie.
Right, I know. I mean, I think I won't. I don't eat too many treats, she says with a twinkle in her eyes.
Her hand drifts to her belly and she pats it.
I mean, maybe a few more than I should.
Stop it. You're beautiful, I say, before I can think better of it. She arches a brow.
Really?
Yes.
I could lose 5 pounds, maybe 10.
I roll my eyes. If you lost 5 pounds, you wouldn't be you. You're a baker. No one wants a skinny baker. And trust me, wherever these 5 or 10 pounds are that you want to lose, I don't want to see them gone. She smiles.
Thank you. The funny thing is, I think I'd regret not tasting and sampling the things I make more than I'd enjoy being 5 pounds lighter. So honestly, I'm happy with my 5 or 10 extra, I suppose. I feel like at the end of my life, whether it's at age 34 or 90 or 29, I won't be saying, I wish I ate less cake, or I wish I had fewer 7-layer bars. And I don't think I'll be saying, I should have spent more time on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat either.
I laugh. Josie's hardly online. She's social, but she's social in real life. What would you regret? She shifts closer and props her head in her hand, mirroring me. The space between us is endless, and at the same time, it barely exists. Maybe 6 or 7 inches separate us. Few enough for me to loop my fingers in her hair, tug her close, and kiss the hell out of her. But more than enough for me to not cross that line, too. Lines. Friendship. Having her in my life. Living with her. Those reasons ought to be enough to stay on this side of the kiss-don't-kiss divide.
I'm not sure I'd regret anything, she says. I'm trying to live a life without regrets. I'm glad I took over the bakery. I'm glad I took out the loan. I'm glad I pursued my dreams. I'm even glad I'm doing the whole online dating thing, she says, and my heart sinks like a stone.
Yeah?
I'd like to find the one. I'd like to fall in love. I'd like to have a family and all that jazz.
You would?
She nods. I would. I try to do the things that matter to me so I won't have regrets. Do you have any regrets?
I flop to my back, reflecting on her question. I've done the things I want to do so far, the things that are important to me. So honestly, aside from you using my hand as Lyle Lyle, I can't really think of a thing I regret not doing, I say, deadpan all the way. She's silent, and I look over at her. A smile spreads slowly across her pretty face. Her green eyes twinkle with mischief, and her soft, sweet lips lift into a sexy grin. Then she flips to her side, her back to me, and slides under the sheets. She scoots closer. I take that as my cue to spoon her. I've drunk too much champagne. I've eaten too much dessert. I'm in bed with Josie Hammer, her sweet, sexy body pressed to mine, and she reaches for my hand. I slide it over her shirt and between her breasts, and I groan. I've finally become a stuffed crocodile, and it's better than all my fantasies. She sighs, the kind of sleepy nighttime sigh of contentment that comes from a woman who's living a life without regret. I'd like to think I am too. But when she falls asleep a minute later in my arms, I do regret something. I regret that I'm completely and utterly unable to resist my best friend. I press a soft kiss to the back of her neck, and I'm certain I can't stay on this side of the divide anymore. Chapter 18. I must have fallen asleep too. But when I wake up, it feels as if I'm still dreaming. My arms are wrapped around her, and my hand is wedged between the two most beautiful breasts I've ever felt. But it's not my hand that is doing the most interesting thing. Not at all. Her hand is on my hip. She's stroking me. She's touching me. She's running her fingers from my hip down the outside of my leg. This is the best dream I've ever had. Her breath catches, and then the dream ratchets up. It goes to dream level 20 or 50 or 10 million when she presses her ass against my dick. She pushes back lightly, and then a soft moan falls from her lips. Oh, it's the sexiest sound I've ever heard, and I surrender to it. Josie, I whisper, my voice raspy. She murmurs. Turn around, baby. The sheets rustle, and then we're face to face. I lift my hand, cup her cheek, and brush my thumb along her jaw. Then I kiss her, and holy fucking hell. I'm on fire in seconds. I'm lit up everywhere. Sparks and desire and lust, they all just fucking combust the second our lips touch. My fingers slide into her hair, and her hand slinks up my bare chest, and I kiss her without holding back. No reservations, no regrets. My tongue sweeps across hers, and she deepens the kiss, seeking more. She kisses me back with a raw hunger. Her lips are eager, and she explores mine just like I do to hers. It's a handoff, a back and forth. I lead, then she leads, then we both kiss greedily, and we can't seem to get enough. I don't want to stop because she tastes so fucking good, and she turns me on so fucking much, and I want her more than I've ever wanted anyone. And in mere seconds of kissing her, I can already tell how she'll be in bed, how she's give and take. Her hands travel up and down my chest, her nails scratch at my pecs, and her fingertips outline my abs. My hand curls around the back of her skull, holding her tight as I kiss her hard, sucking on her bottom lip, then the top, then just devouring her mouth. I push her shoulders down to the bed, and we're no longer side to side. She's on her back, and I know where she wants me. I know where I want to be. Her hand tugs at my hip, and I move on top of her. And then I'm so far fucking gone, because she spreads her legs. I grab her thigh, hook it around my hip, and then grind against her. Yeah, I'm dry humping her, and it's fucking astonishing. I kiss and thrust, and she moans and arches. She kisses me with her whole body, and it makes my head swim with lust.
I'm dying, fucking dying to be inside her. I'm so goddamn hard, and she's already ridiculously wet. I can feel her damp panties through these flimsy shorts that I want to tear off her. But I don't want to break contact. I just want to fuck Josie like this. When she matches a rough thrust of mine, a white-hot charge of pleasure surges down my spine, and I stop the kiss. I'm not in danger of firing early, but I can't hold back what's on my mind. She stares up at me with dazed eyes. I grab her chin, hold her face firmly. "You okay with all this?" I ask, my voice tight. I have to know. I need to make sure she's good with what's happening. "Completely," she says, her voice as certain as my desire. I sigh, and it's full of fucking gratitude that she's on the same page. I stare into her eyes and say what I've longed to tell her. "I want you so much." It's not poetry. It's not even the kind of filthy smut that probably wins awards wherever awards are handed out for that. But I don't care. It's the truth, plain and simple. "I want you too, Chase," she says. Her answer is my greatest wish. Letting go of her chin, I drop my face to her neck, sucking on her flesh. The scent of her cherry lotion floods my nostrils, and I'm getting high. She's fucking cocaine to me. And God, I want more. It's euphoric. It's electric. The rush I get from smelling her, from moving against her, from kissing her. "God, you smell so good," I growl. "Do you have any idea what it's like having you as a roommate when you go around smelling like that?" She laughs lightly, and at the same time she tightens her legs around my ass. "How do I smell?" "Like cherries and sex and cake, and all I have to do is take one whiff of you and I'm rock hard," I say, thrusting against her to prove my point. She moans, stretching her neck. "You are rock hard, and I love it, and I love that you're turned on because it's the same for me with you." She grabs my face, holding me as she grinds up into my dick. "I sniffed your shaving cream the other day." My eyes widen. "You did?" "You weren't home. I opened the medicine cabinet. I smelled it and I shivered." Then she lowers her voice even more. "And it made me wet just thinking of you." Lust rattles through my bones. I swivel my hips and grind against her through all these stupid clothes. "You were that aroused?" "God, yes," she moans as she lets go of my face, her hands darting around to grab my ass. "When you tugged at that towel, I fucking went crazy," I say, and the admissions are rolling out, rattling free, spilling everywhere. "The other morning?" I nod as I push against her. She gasps. "Oh, God, please. I think I'm going to come like this," she says, and that's a battle cry if I ever heard one. I heed it. I fuck her with clothes on. She moans and groans and cries out. Somehow she spreads her legs wider and then she just rocks up into me, finding a perfect rhythm against the outline of my cock. As I thrust, I kiss her neck, travel to her ear, and nip on her earlobe. I want to hear every moan she makes up close. I want her noises in stereo. I want to drown in the sounds of her coming, in her yes and oh God and so close. She digs her nails into my ass and rocks up into me. I love that she's found what she needs, that my dick, even through clothes, is enough friction to get her off. And when she goes, it's like an explosion. She cries out, she moans, she writhes, and she warns me like I need it. "I'm coming, oh God, I'm coming, oh my fucking God, I'm fucking coming." What a smoking, filthy, wonderfully dirty mouth she has. Her lips fall into an O, and her eyes squeeze shut. Pleasure and torment mix exquisitely on her beautiful face. I don't even try to separate anything anymore. I'm so fucking lost in her. I don't pretend. I don't want to. I can't do anything but stare in awe at the glory of Josie coming beneath me in my bed. "Oh God, oh God, oh God," she says, panting and moaning as she starts to come down. She breathes out hard, and each exhalation sounds like pure satisfaction. Then she laughs, a giggle at first,
As it turns into a chuckle, I arch a brow. Something funny? She shakes her head and opens her eyes. They're glossy with lust and brimming with satisfaction.
No, I'm laughing because it was so good.
I flash her a lopsided grin as pride surges through me. Yeah? She loops her arms around my neck and tugs me down, bringing my mouth to hers and kissing me. When she breaks the kiss, she says,
Yeah, Chase, it was the definition of mind-blowing.
I wiggle an eyebrow. And then her busy little hand darts between us, shooting down to my briefs. She cups my dick, and I'm not even sure I can ever speak again. Words fail me. There is nothing as good as Josie touching me when I'm on the edge already. She whistles, a low, appreciative sound.
Nice package, Summers.
What can I say? I wasn't shortchanged when dicks were handed out. Then she lets go, pushes on my chest, and knocks me to my back. In a second, I'm pinned. She straddles me, dropping down on my cock, rubbing against me. Her little shorts are damp, soaked all the way through. Grabbing my wrists, she pins them over my head, such a fierce little thing. Straddling me, she rocks back and forth, and holy shit, my roommate is a wild lover. She's daring and unafraid, and she wants me. It floors me, the look in her eyes, all heat and fire, her green irises like blazing emeralds. She lowers her face near mine, her hair falling like a curtain, framing me in more of her wondrous scent. God, when did I become so addicted to the way someone smelled? I don't have a clue, but it's happened with her.
Chase, she whispers,
and for a second I tense, thinking she's going to want to talk about what we're doing. I don't want to discuss or dissect it, but we're on the same wavelength because she says,
Want to know what else gets me off?
My throat grows dry. Yes, I do. A little thrust of her hips.
Want to know what did it for me in the shower the other night?
I strain against her wrists. I want to touch her so badly, but I can tell she wants to steer this ship. I'm dying to know, I rasp out, my voice like a dry husk on a hot summer day. Then the vixen runs her tongue over her teeth, bringing her mouth to my earlobe and whispers,
The thought of sucking your cock.
I'm roasted. I'm fried. I'm well past broiled. I push against her hands, sit up, cup her cheeks, and stare into her eyes. Do it, I tell her. She nibbles on the corner of her lip and shoots me a wicked grin. She's like a quick fox, darting down, her hands tugging at the waistband of my boxers. She yanks them off, my dick springing free. She kneels between my legs and takes my cock in her hand. She's silent for a moment. When she speaks, her words are the best dirty poetry.
You're fucking beautiful, she says,
staring at me as if she's mesmerized. And she's not looking at my face. She's gazing at my dick, and I couldn't be happier that she's bestowing compliments on that part of my anatomy. She wraps her hand tighter and strokes up once, and it feels out of this world good. I shudder. She bends lower and licks. Holy fuck, I mutter, my head falling back onto the pillow. It's so ridiculously good. She swirls her tongue over the head, licking me as if I'm a piece of candy and making the sexiest murmurs. Fuck, that's good, baby. She wraps her lips nice and tight and inches lower, taking more. The pleasure in me shoots into the atmosphere, sails above the stratosphere. I don't want to go crazy and fuck her mouth hard, but God, I want to go crazy and fuck her mouth hard. I lace my hands in her hair and thrust up into her heavenly mouth, letting her lead, letting her take what she can. She takes it all, sucks me to the base, and then licks her way back up. She drives me insane. Jesus fucking Christ, I say, and when I stare down, she's smiling, she's fucking grinning, and her eyes meet mine. They're full of both mischief and utter sensual delight. My God, this woman, this amazing woman. She picks up the pace, and her mouth is a blur. My vision is too, and my whole body sizzles. It crackles, it pops, it's ready to snap,
I'm losing control, and an orgasm gathers force in my body as her mouth races over my dick. When she wraps her hand around my shaft, squeezing the base, I fire. Unspeakable pleasure barrels through me from a climax so powerful it rocks me to my bones. I grunt and grip her head, my hands curling tighter as I come in her mouth and my whole body turns electric with ecstasy. At some point the orgasm recedes, but I'm still floating because that was the kind of orgasm you could measure on the Richter scale. It's the kind that makes the news, that causes epic aftershocks. I tremble as another wave ripples through me. With a loud, wet pop, she lets go of my dick, wipes her hand over her mouth, and crawls up my body. "You tasted better than you did in the shower." I kiss her, and she seems surprised at first, like who would kiss a girl who just went down on him? "This guy." She kisses me back harder, and when we separate, I say, "I want to do that to you."
"I want that too."
I cup her cheek. "I want to sleep with you, Josie. I want to be inside you. God, I want you so much there aren't enough Swedish fish to explain it."
"I want you too," she says, then dusts a light kiss on my lips. "But I'm not ready tonight."
And I don't know what that means except the obvious. This isn't a one-time thing. Chapter 19. She's up and gone before I even wake up. It's probably for the best. Not that I don't want to see her. More like all I want is to see her, but I don't know what we're supposed to say or do, or how we're supposed to act after last night. Do I just bump into her on the way into the bathroom to brush my teeth and say, "Hey," all nonchalant? Or do we wake up and pepper each other's cheeks with morning smooches? I drag my ass out of bed, grateful I don't have to make those decisions this morning. After I shower, dress, and grab my phone, I head for the door. I stop and stare and grin. On the doorknob hangs a black lace thong, like she promised she'd leave if she expected to be getting it on. But that was when we'd first laid out our roommate rules, when we didn't expect to be getting it on with each other. Truth be told, though, I can recall a dose of jealousy coursing through me during that conversation at the mere prospect of her with someone else. Hell, maybe this thing between us started before I was even aware of it. I grab the scrap of lacy fabric, twirl it on my finger, and then bring it to my nose. It smells fresh and clean, like her laundry detergent. I toy with the idea of stuffing it into my pocket, but I'm not a panty stuffer, or even a habitual panty sniffer for that matter. Instead, I leave it on the coffee table, and I look for a sheet of paper to write her a note when I spot something else from her. A small, see-through plastic bag from her bakery with a sunshine yellow ribbon wrapped around it. Inside are red candies. A little bakery card dangles from the ribbon. I flick it open and read. "Are things supposed to be awkward now between us, or weird, or tense? I hope not. But just in case, here's some Swedish fish and the hope for more." My heart thumps harder than it should from a gift of candy, but it's not just candy. It's the perfect morning after acknowledgement. It's everything I wanted to say last night but couldn't. It's her knowing how to fucking handle this. And it's one more thing that makes me want her in every way. I ride my bike to the hospital, whipping through the early morning traffic like nothing can get me down, and nothing can, because something is happening, something wild and crazy and undoubtedly incredibly foolish. But right now, it feels so fucking good, like sailing, like flying, like soaring. Chase, can't stop thinking about you. Josie, ditto, ditto, ditto. Chase, love the panties. Josie, thought you might. Chase, love the fish. I ate them all when I walked into work. Totally got jacked up on a sugar high before I had to put stitches in a chin. Some dude fell off his skateboard. Josie, ouch. But maybe you've uncovered some new natural high for a physician. Chase, ha, maybe I have. Also, most of all, love the note. A lot. I'm curious, though. Did you just happen to have candy on hand?
Josie. Perhaps I did. Perhaps I had them on hand just for this occasion.
Chase. More later. Forceps calling my name. But that is awesome.
Josie.
Good luck, Dr. McHotty. When you're done with whatever emergency has your name on it, here's this treat for you.
A picture fills my screen, and I stop in the hospital corridor, grab the wall, and try to snap my tongue back up from the floor. Because I am panting that hard as I gawk at the image of the tops of her breasts. She took a goddamn fucking selfie of her tits, and I'm royally turned on. But here at work, I have to keep the drawers neat, so I turn off my phone. I'm all business for the 2 hours until break time.
Chase. Had to remove a marble from a nose, and it took all my brain power not to think of the sad fact that I didn't get to see your breasts in the flesh last night. Your picture didn't help.
Wait, scratch that. Send more. Show them all to me.
Chase. I should let you know I'm a dirty bastard, and you have the world's most glorious breasts I've ever seen, only I haven't seen them yet. Therefore, I'm sad.
Josie.
Don't be sad. I have a solution to make you happy.
Chase. More pictures?
Josie.
Better. I'll flash you when you get home.
Chase. Did you just hear the groan of excitement I made all the way from Mercy?
Josie.
It's still reverberating here in the Upper West Side.
Chase. Also, please do more than flash me.
Chase. Gotta go. Break's over. See ya.
Josie.
Good luck. Let me know if you want me to bring you home anything.
Chase. You.
Chapter 20. Max lowers the hood on an electric blue beauty, gently closing it. His eyes are focused on the metal meeting metal the entire time, until it's whisper quiet on the lot. Then he turns, wipes his hands on a red-checked rag, and nods hello.
What will that sapphire baby set me back?
I tip my chin toward the sleek vehicle that shines so bright it's reflecting the skyscrapers nearby where Max's custom car shop is located in Midtown West. He looks at me and shakes his head.
More than you ever can afford, he says, then tucks the rag into the back of his jeans, streaked with grease.
He's shirtless, the fucking show-off.
Dude, put a shirt on.
You can't handle this much manliness, can you? He puffs out his chest, the intricate Celtic tats on his pec and the tribal bands on his arms on full display. I roll my eyes.
Let's just say I see more bodies naked in a day than you can even imagine, and though most aren't vying for centerfold of the month, yours still ranks as the one I least want to see bare.
In a flurry, Max wraps an arm around me and puts me in a headlock.
Fuck, I forgot how strong he is.
His muscle-bound bicep ropes tighter around me, and he digs his knuckles into my head, reminding me how he's the master at noogies.
Say you love me best, Max commands, his voice deep, my bare chest especially.
I wince as his grip tightens. I refuse to give in.
Never, I grunt.
You sure? His knuckles might, just might, be penetrating my skull now. He's sweaty, too.
Crap. I have to give in.
Nope, I can't give in.
I love you, but not your chest, I say between stilted breaths.
The punishment deepens. He squeezes harder. Airflow becomes a debatable item in my life. I have no choice.
And your stupid chest, I mutter.
My chest isn't stupid. His hold on me turns pincer grip style, but his skin is sweaty from work, and with one quick twist I break free, then dart out from his grip. Thrusting both hands in the air, I strut across the asphalt.
And speed beats brawn, I tease.
Max just shakes his head at me as he strides inside the garage and grabs a black T-shirt from his messy desk strewn with papers and tools. He tugs the shirt on and wipes his brow. He returns to the small lot.
And the answer is, this baby is a cool 500K. He says, running his hand lovingly along the exterior of the car.
I whistle.
Damn.
What have you Frankenstein together here?
It's a souped-up Lambo, and get this. His dark brown eyes gleam with excitement. Got a call earlier today about custom outfitting a car for RBC Network for a new show where the hero is like a modern-day Magnum P.I.
Fuck yeah, I say, clasping his hand in a congratulatory shake. That's awesome.
It'll be a blast, and it should do wonders for business, he says, and mimes an explosion with his hands. Max's business is already killing it, and he's got several celebrity clients as well as plenty of under-the-radar high rollers. But this kind of deal could be huge for publicity.
You are a rock star, I say, no joking, no teasing this time. You ready to ride?
Always, he says, since we're scheduled for a training ride before I head home. Josie has her soccer league tonight, so I'm not sure when I'll see her. He heads inside to grab his road bike, and while he's gone, my phone beeps. I grab it from my pocket.
Josie.
Game over.
We crushed the competition.
Chase. Because you're fucking fierce on the field.
Josie.
That might be true. Smiley face. Okay, catching the subway, heading home. How was your day? Before I tap out a reply, I answer the question in my head. My day was fucking amazing. My day was fantastic. My day was the best ever because of last night, but more so because of where I want to be right now, where she is. I drop the mic. That's it. Everything's clear. I know. I just fucking know. She's the one I want to spend the rest of this day with. She's the one I want to talk to about my good days and my bad days. She's more than my roommate. She's more than one of my best friends. She's the one I want every day. I have no clue what happens after tonight, but I need tonight with her to start right the fuck now. When Max rolls out on his bike, I point my thumb across town. I gotta bail.
What?
He asks, like this doesn't compute.
You were right.
I always am, but what about this time?
Just say I told you so. Just go ahead and say it.
I told you so? He tosses out quizzically.
You did, and I have to go see Josie.
Wait, no, correction, I want to go see Josie. Max snickers and shoots me the biggest I told you so grin in the history of facial expressions. I shrug. What can you do? Then I go to the only place I want to be. The diagnosis I was trying to piece together last night, all the symptoms point to one malady. I've got it bad for this girl. I've got a textbook condition of a classic illness. I'm suffering from a motherfucking case of falling in love. And I'm not ready to take a pill to cure it.
Chapter 21. It's a scene ripped straight from a fantasy I never knew I had. But it's so incredibly enticing that the vision in front of me has shot straight up the ranks. We're talking the pantheon of dirty images, and it's not even filthy, yet. Josie's in the kitchen, wearing an apron and heels. Her hair is twisted in a bun with a chopstick stabbed through it. A home-cooked meal sits cooling on the rack on the stovetop. I've never had naughty housewife fantasies, but I think I might now. The apartment smells like my favorite food ever, the one I missed most in Africa. Pizza pie with cheese and mushrooms. An 80s tune, Tempted by Squeeze, is playing. If I stop to think about it, the lyrics are wildly wrong. It's technically a song about straying, but I'm convinced this song became famous because all you hear in this tune is the longing, the want, the hunger for another person. That's the thing about song lyrics. You take the parts that speak to you. Temptation talks loud and clear to me. Temptation shakes her butt to the beat. Lord help me. This. When the door falls shut behind me with a loud snap, Josie startles and swivels around. She brings her hand to her chest.
Oh, God, you scared me.
Sorry, I say, dropping my keys on the table by the door. She grabs her phone from the counter and lowers the volume.
Hey, she says, setting the cell down as I entered the tiny kitchen. I made you a...
I crush her mouth to mine before she can say pizza. A sexy oh escapes her lips, and then she gives me all I want. Her.
She loops her hands around my neck, her fingers traveling up to my hair, playing with the ends. Lust charges down my spine. I sweep my lips across hers, our mouths connecting as we find the rhythm that makes this kiss its own kind of sexy song. I can't break it down to the melody or the lyrics, the notes or the chords. All I know is this kiss has all the makings of a number one hit. It has that certain something, that indefinable quality that hooks you right in the heart, hits you hard in the chest, and sends the heat levels to incendiary. Backing her up a few inches to the counter, I slam my body against hers. A sharp, sexy gasp falls from her lips as I break the kiss. "Hey, you," I whisper hungrily. "Nice to see you, too," she says, then pulls me back to her, our lips crashing together once more. My hands dive into her hair, and I rip the chopstick out, letting those soft brown strands spill over my fingers as the wooden stick clatters to the floor. As I kiss her, my mind goes hazy, and I shove aside all thoughts of anything but lust and want and heat. Clasping her face in my hands, I kiss her even harder, even hungrier, until I can't take just kissing her. I have to have more of her. All of her. When I break the kiss, she's panting. Her hair is a wild mess. Her lips are swollen and red, almost bruised. Her green eyes shine with desire. She's never looked hotter than she does right now. My eyes roam down her body. Her apron is light blue, with a cherry pattern on it. She wears a skirt under it, and the dark red material lands right above her knees. Underneath the apron is some kind of strappy little white tank top. Brushing my hands along her arms, I watch her shiver. "This apron," I say, fingering the hem. "Yeah?" My hands dart up to her chest, then around her neck where it ties, but I don't undo the knot. There's something I'm curious about.
"What is it?"
As I fiddle playfully with the straps, I meet her eyes. "I can't stop wondering how you'd look in just this apron on top." Her lips curve up in a naughty grin, and she reaches behind her. The little pink